Hi, this is the voice, Michael Schiavello. You're listening to the Premium Oddscast, hosted by leading MMA odds maker Nick Kalikas, fight scientist and author of Fightnomics, Reid Kuhn, and MMA journalist Brian Heminger. The absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting, MMAoddsbreaker.com.
Welcome to the Premium Oddscast, presented by Five Dime Sportsbook. I'm Brian Heminger, joined today by leading mixed martial arts oddsmaker Nick Kalikas to break down this Saturday's UFC Fight Night 121 event, which takes place in Sydney, Australia. If you're unfamiliar with our format, Nick and I will break down the fight card from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. Looking back at our last event, we won one unit for UFC Fight Night 120 after going 1-0 on our premium bets. We also won 1.7 units on our free bet on Nina Ansarov. Back to the present, UFC Fight Night 121 features a 13-fight card in total and will be aired on UFC Fight Pass and Fox Sports 1 this Saturday night. Let's dive right in. Now, kicking things off on Fight Pass is a heavyweight contest between Rashad Coulter, who is 8-2, and Tai Tuivasa, who is 5-0. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Tuivasa -215, the comeback on Coulter at +165, and that's at our sponsored sportsbook, 5dimes.eu. So as always, make sure you guys give them some love and check them out as well. But right now, over at 5 dimes, Tuivasa is -170. Comeback and Coulter is at +150. So a little bit more action coming in the dog's way. I mean, you got two big boys here going at it. So both of them have a tremendous amount of knockout power. I get it. I mean, I don't blame people for taking a shot at the dog here, because this is going to be some fireworks, no doubt. And it's a great way to start off the card. I mean, you got two big boys that can really stand and bang, and that usually can put people's lights out for sure. And both of them relatively inexperienced. I know Coulter has a little bit more experience, but again, on their resumes, I mean, Coulter's obviously his hardest and best fight on his resume was his last fight, his UFC debut, which was an absolute war. I mean, that was a crazy war. Unfortunately for him, he didn't get the job done. He didn't win the fight, but still, he took the fight on short notice. So Coulter has beaten up and knocked out a lot of guys that he kind of should beat up and knock out. So as far as real-time experience and level of competition goes, again, I think both of these guys have a ways to go. But as far as what their skill sets go and what potential they have, I mean, both these guys are going to win some fights in the heavyweight division. There's no doubt about that. Getting into Tuivasa a little bit first. He is the former, or I should say current. I mean, he's given up his strap right now because he's entering UFC, but AFC heavyweight champion, that's an Australian based company. So he's won a strap, you know, on the minor circuits out there. He has been out of action since October, 2016. His win over UFC vet, McSweeney. So not a bad win. I mean, I'm talking about these guys lacking experience. He's fought, Tuivasa's fought a couple people with a heartbeat like that. I mean, McSweeney's not a total can, but still, it's a fight that Tuivasa honestly should win. Overall, Tuivasa's background, I mean, he's an athlete. He's a former rugby player. He's already semi-popular, I mean, in Australia for sure. So he's got, you know, he's marketable. He's got that area supporting him. He's got a good fan base. And I mean, with his athleticism, I mean, he was, like I said, a rugby player. He basically got into MMA, believe it or not. He gambled away like 20K or something one night at the casino after a rugby game. And so he shifted his attention to boxing or to fighting in general, to fighting. So that's why he kind of shifted over. He wanted to try to make a little bit better money in the fight world. So, I mean, this is the kind of drive and the kind of thought this guy kind of had. Watching film on him, you could tell he's been working. I mean, overall, from some of the fights that he had pre-official MMA, like I'm talking about MMA type of boxing rules that he fought in that aren't documented on his resume, to actual MMA fights, I mean, you could tell even his physique has gotten a little bit slimmer and he's been putting in the work. And the guy, I mean, with his athleticism, he has power. He's actually got some pretty good footwork and movement. He's light on his feet for a big boy as well. He's got a really good chin. I mean, there's a lot to like about this guy. He's got decent takedown defense. He does go for takedowns at time as well. He's got a little bit of ground and pound, but again, he's still developing and he's still a little raw. So I don't want to go too long on this fight. I've already talked a lot about Tuivasa and a little bit of his background. And shifting over to Coulter real quick, I mean, a lot of similarities can be said. I don't think Coulter is quite the athlete Tuivasa is, but again, I mean, he's a big boy. He's got a ton of power. He's got good boxing, and obviously he's got a pretty solid chin as well, because I mean, that war that he had with Sherman in his debut, as I mentioned, was pretty decent to watch. I mean, it was a fun fight. So Coulter here is not making making his UFC debut. He's not making it on short notice, so I'm expecting better things from Coulter as well. So this is going to be a test. Tuivasa is the more hyped fighter. I'm going to pick him to win. I think he does win. I can understand the early action coming in Coulter's way because you got big boys and both of them have power, but I honestly think that people are probably underestimating Tuivasa a little bit, too much. I think he is a special type of athlete. And if he gets his conditioning and everything kind of in order and he starts taking strides and moving up the ladder in the UFC, I think some big things can definitely happen for him in the future. So my pick is Tuivasa. I think he ends up finishing Coulter and we're going to be impressed by his UFC debut. That's my take.
Personally, I don't think Rashad Coulter is the type of fighter that can get a lot of wins in the UFC heavyweight division, even as thin as the UFC's heavyweight division is right now. I didn't think he looked that good against Chase Sherman. I mean, he got his legs just chewed up in that fight. I know he took it on short notice, but he didn't look very good. The only time he did anything was when Sherman just kind of waded into his power. Tuivasa is a much more accomplished striker. He's a tremendous athlete, as Nick mentioned, coming from the rugby background. Then he got into boxing and then some mixed MMA / boxing styles and then eventually MMA and where he's gone 5-0. And he's done all of this and he's still just 24 years old. So that just shows, just how accomplished of an athlete he is that he can just dive right into this fresh and be so successful. I really think the world of Tuivasa. I think, if he can just find the right training environment and get the right people working with him, this guy has all the potential to become one of the better heavyweights on the roster down the line. Now, granted, he hasn't even made his UFC debut yet, so I don't want to get ahead of myself, but you don't see a lot of young, talented heavyweights like this with a lot of power. So, Tuivasa, I think he just tears Coulter up. On the feet. I don't think there's any need for this to go to the ground unless he hurts him and tries to finish him with ground and pound. So Tuivasa should just have the tremendous technical striking advantage. He's 11 years younger than Coulter. He's bigger. He's stronger. He should have the longer reach. He's taller. He's got everything going for him here. As long as he doesn't walk into something, he should win handily. So my pick is going to be Tuivasa. Now dropping all the way down to the flyweight division, we have Janelle Lausa, who is 7-3, taking on Eric Shelton, who is 10-4. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Shelton, -405, the comeback on Lausa at +285. Right now, looking over five times, it's Shelton -360. The comeback on Lausa is at +300. So line margins have tightened up, and there is two-way action coming on this fight. And if you're taking a first glance at the line, I mean, Shelton might look a tad high because Losa's no slouch. I mean, the guy is definitely a pretty good fighter, especially in the flyweight division. But truthfully, look closer at Shelton's resume. And I mean, you could see the guy lost a split decision that could have went his way against Brooks. Pantoja was another split decision that could have went his way as well. On the show, the Ultimate Fighter show, he performed really well, lost a very competitive decision to Elliott as well. So basically what I'm saying is Shelton's losing to the top tier guys in the flyweight division. And Lausa is not really on that level quite yet. But he is a good fighter and he could get there. I mean, he's 29 years old, still has a little bit of time to improve and really hit his stride and get better in all ends. But right now, I think Shelton is just the better MMA fighter overall. And I think all of that comes into play basically with his roots and his wrestling. I think that's what's going to come into play here as well. Lausa is the kind of guy that wants to stand and bang. Obviously, his striking is clean. It's powerful. He's got accuracy with it as well. He's typically speaking, he's got pretty solid takedown defense, decent offensive wrestling as well. But that's where he's going to, I think, be at fault here. He's going to end up playing the game with Shelton, and Shelton's probably going to get a top position and out-grapple him on the ground. I think that's where the biggest edge is for Shelton. On the feet, I mean, it'll be close. I think Lausa might have obviously a slight advantage, but Shelton's game on the feet as well. I mean, he's got a little bit of power. He's got some speed. He's got some decent fight IQ as well. So this fight should be fireworks. I mean, typically speaking, until – you know, the fight hits the ground. Maybe Shelton starts taking over and dominating the fight, possibly if that's the case, and maybe even sinks into choke or something along that line. But I think overall we're going to see a close competitive 29-28 type of decision win for Shelton more so than anything else. So the pick of Shelton, I think he finally gets a much needed UFC win. I mean, it'd be a shame to see him lose another fight in the UFC, especially a close competitive decision. Because the guy is just so much better than that. So again, respect to Lausa, but I just think he's outmatched here. He's outclassed. I think Shelton's going to get the W.
I'll keep this one simple. Lausa is as good a striker as Shelton, but I think Shelton should be able to hold his own in the stand-up with him. And then if it goes to the ground, Lausa's a bit active with his defense and everything on the ground, but I think Shelton should have the better wrestling, should have the superior positioning, and he should win the ground battle. So Shelton overall is just the better fighter, and I think Shelton doesn't really have any chin issues or anything, so I don't have to worry too much about him being caught by anything out of nowhere. So unless Lausa just beats him up on the feet over the course of three rounds and wins a decision, I think Shelton finally gets that first UFC win after a pair of really close split decision losses. So I just think Shelton's the better overall fighter, and he's faced better competition, and he's performed better against the better competition. So this is Eric Shelton's time to shine, and I think he does shine here. So Shelton is my pick. Now moving on to the main event of the Fight Pass prelims, we have a women's strawweight contest between Alex Chambers, who is 5-2, and Nadia Kasim, who is 4-0. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up on Kasim, -150, the comeback on Chambers at +110. Right now over at Five Dimes, Kasim -165, Chambers +145. So a little bit more action coming in Kasim's way. Line merges have tightened up here as well. Kasim definitely the more popular fighter. I mean, nothing against Alex Chambers, but she's the type of girl that doesn't really get a lot of respect at the betting window anyway. But honestly, I think she's probably a little bit underrated, especially with her ground game. The girl is pretty slick on her ground. She's faced nothing but good competition. So again, you got to have some respect for her. She comes to fight every time. And unfortunately for her, especially in the UFC, it just hasn't worked out her way. But that being said, she has a chance to win a fight here against Kasim. I mean, Kasim's a good prospect from what you see of her. I mean, with her attitude, her ability as far as striking goes, that's exactly what her background is. In fact, she has a Taekwondo background as a youth, I believe, but now she's also trained in boxing and BJJ as well. So she's a well-rounded fighter, but she's more of a striking-based fighter is what I'm getting at. So she's going to want to probably keep this fight upright and try to destroy Chambers on the feet, and Chambers is going to probably want to get this fight to the ground and beat Kasim on the ground. So that's what the path to victory for both ladies are here. And, I think – it's tough because I could see Chambers kind of surviving early on and possibly catching Kasim along the way and by some kind of submission as well. The problem with me with Kasim is, I mean, it really looks to me she's fought all punching bags thus far. I mean, she hasn't been challenged at all. So this is a huge step up in competition, even if it is Chambers that she's facing again. I mean, UFC's matching her up with a winnable fight here if she's smart on the ground at least. But will she be able to get over that hump and finally take – on a real opponent in Chambers? Because like I said, the rest of them, I mean, you can look back at her footage. I mean, she fought one old lady that she did a spin on her. It was just, it's ridiculous. Her competition level has been ridiculous. You can see that Kasim definitely has potential. And again, with her attitude, with her aggressiveness, with that killer instinct that she has, yes, she's a very marketable fighter as well. I mean, she could be really popular and a good addition at 115 pounds for the UFC roster. But I mean, she's still so raw and she's still developing. She's only 22 years old. So I don't have a lot of confidence in this fight. I mean, one mistake from Kasim could get her subbed and finished. So I'm going to pick her to win. But based on what I just said and her lack of inexperience compared to Chambers, I mean, Chambers has been, like I said, she's been through some wars. She's been in there with some of the best competition there is to be in there with. So, I mean, there's nothing Kasim's going to throw at her that she hasn't already seen. Now, is she going to win that fight? I doubt it. I think Kasim does win, but I mean, we'll see how this plays out. So not a lot of confidence because I don't think anybody can have, but the pick is Kasim to win and probably finishes Chambers along the way on the feet.
Kasim has looked decent in the film we've seen, but again, as Nick mentioned, she wasn't fighting anybody. You look at her professional record, 4-0 with three of the finishes coming in like the first 30 seconds and the other one coming in like 90 seconds. So she's never left the first round. She's never even left the second minute of a fight. And she, if you add up all of the wins of her opponent so far in her career, it's zero. They're 0-10. And that includes the four losses to her. So that means they've only ever fought six other times against other people and they lost those fights too. So that is my biggest issue with Kasim is she's has no experience past the first couple minutes of professional MMA fights, and she hasn't fought anybody. Alex Chambers, she has not performed very well, in my opinion, but at least she's fought people. Paige Van Zandt smoked her. Yeah, Kaylin Curran was crushing her until Chambers pulled out a miracle armbar late in the third round. But at least she was in there against those opponents. So that's the big question mark. Chambers is also 39 years old compared to Kasim being 22. So there's a ridiculous 17-year age difference between these two fighters. So I have to lean Kasim just based on durability, based on youth, and the fact that she could have developed a lot from what we've seen since the last time she fought in February. Especially the young fighters. I mean, they can grow exponentially early on in their careers. So, Chambers, basically what you see is what you get, and she has not fought in 2 years. So that also is important. So I'm leaning Kasim. I think that she has, definitely the better striking of the two. She has a pretty good straight left. She has some nasty knees when she closes the distance. She's a bit untested on the ground, even though I heard she does come with a bit of a jiu-jitsu background. But I mean, the way Chambers wins, she usually is able to pull off arm bars and stuff like that. So I wouldn't be shocked if Chambers wins, if this goes to the ground, but if it stays standing, Kasim should be victorious. So I'm going to lean her way. Now, kicking things off on the Fox Sports 1 preliminary card is a lightweight contest between Damian Brown, who is 17-10, and Frank Camacho, who is 20-5. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I'm in this fight exactly a pick, minus 120 each way. Minus 120 Brown, minus 120 Camacho. Right now, over five dimes, it's Camacho the favorite. Minus 140, the comeback on Brown, plus 120. So staying close to the opener, but a little bit more of a lean towards Camacho right now. And it seems like that's where the overall action is coming in. And that's what the opinion is out there as well. Hard to deny it, man. I mean, Camacho, I'm glad he's finally getting his shot in the UFC. I know, you know, he lost his debut to Jing Lang, and that was a heck of a fight and a heck of a performance that he took on short notice as well. At actually 170 pounds, in that fight. So he's dropping down to 155 pounds, which is a better weight class for him, at lightweight for sure. So I'm glad to see him do that. But I'm saying I'm glad he's even on the roster because Camacho is one of those, you know, MMA veterans that have been around the sport for a long time, and he deserves to get this opportunity with some of the regional wins and, you know, some of the stuff that he's been through throughout his career. Good to see him on the roster, and he's got a winnable fight in front of him. I mean, Brown is a pretty good fighter as well. He's pretty well-rounded. I mean, I think what the best part of Brown's game is obviously his ground, but he does have a little bit of power on the feet. He does have some stand-up skill as well. So this is going to be a fight. It's going to be a back and forth battle, I think. Both these guys are going to look to wrestle, look to get the fight to the ground. Both these guys are going to want to stand and bang and try to prove who's got a little bit more KO power. I think since Brown is actually coming off of, you know, a disappointing knockout loss in his last performance to Pichel, I think he's going to probably want to try to clinch up a little bit more and maybe not play the stand-up game as much. So we'll see how it plays out. It might end up being a boring fight if these guys keep on clinching and trying to get to opposition on each other or you know, fence grab or, you know, or kind of find their way alongside the cage for most of the rounds or whatever too. So we'll see. Hopefully it takes place in the middle of the cage and we see these guys bang a little bit. If that's the case, you do got to lean a little bit more towards Camacho though. I think he's got more of the pure knockout power. He is the better striker overall. I was nothing but impressed with his accuracy as well. And he's a finisher, man. That's what Camacho does. I mean, he's got really good power in his hands. Like I said, he does have, again, some BJJ and wrestling to go along with it. But Camacho, to me, where it's at with him is definitely his stand up. And I mean, he just comes a bang. So you got to respect that in him. And I think that that's his path to victory here as well. Now there is a concern a little bit with Camacho. I mean, he's a little bit chinny for being, like I said, more of a striking based fighter. In my opinion, I think he is a tad bit chinny and he does gas at times as well. Now I know his UFC debut, he gassed, but that was again a short notice take for him. So you got to give him a little bit of leeway there. But even if you look back at some previous footage, I mean, he tends to gas because he throws so much into his, you know, his strikes that as the fight progresses, he does slow down a little bit too. So that's maybe where Brown could take advantage if he could survive early on as the fight progresses and maybe steals one on the cards or possibly finishes Camacho late here as well. But outside of that, I think it's going to be Camacho's fight to win or lose. I mean, I think it's a good spot for him here. Again, it is at lightweight with his power, with Brown coming off a knockout loss. I mean, everything's adding up here. As long as Camacho doesn't spend too much time on his back, which, I mean, his takedown defense overall is pretty solid. I think he should be able to keep this fight upright for the most part. I think Camacho probably wins the fight. So I do agree with the slight action coming in Camacho's way a little bit as well. I think it will be a competitive fight, could go either way realistically, but I do lean slightly towards Camacho. I expect him to get the W here.
Yeah, something you have to take into consideration, Camacho made his UFC debut on short notice against Li Jinglong at welterweight, and while he didn't win that fight, I mean, he earned fight of the night out of his weight class on short notice. I thought that was pretty impressive. And Camacho's a guy that has good finishing power, and he's dangerous. And Damian Brown, you can never really say that about him. He's always just been kind of a guy that is looking to grind out a win. He doesn't really have the most power on the feet. He doesn't have the best submission game. And that's probably the best part of his game, but Camacho has pretty decent takedown defense. I mean, he was able to fend off most of Li Jinglong's takedowns. So if he could do that, he should be able to fend off Damian Brown's. And then on the feet, Camacho, in my opinion, is just the better overall technical striker. And then while Nick said he doesn't have the greatest chin, he does have more power than Brown. So I think that can make up for it, especially since Brown is coming off of a TKO loss. So I actually really like Frank Camacho here. As long as he doesn't get put on his back repeatedly, he should be in really good shape. He should get the better of Brown on the feet. He should be landing the heavier shots. And I wouldn't even be shocked if he ended up getting a takedown or two. I mean, he got a takedown or two against Li Jinglong in their fight and got top position a couple times. So I think Frank Camacho turns things around. I think the move back to his native lightweight division is going to be really good for him. And I expect that he doesn't just win, but I think he looks really good against Brown in his debut at lightweight inside the octagon. Now moving up to the heavyweight division, we have Anthony Hamilton, who is 15-8, taking on Adam Weixerack, who is 8-1. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Weixerack -150, the comeback on Hamilton at +110. Right now, looking over at the line at Five Dimes, it's Weixerack -160, comeback on Hamilton +140. So line margins have tightened up a little bit, Weixerack getting a little bit more action. Not surprising. I mean, a lot of people love to fade Hamilton. And of course, this fight, I should mention right away, was supposed to take place at Fight Night 118, so not long ago, and they pushed this back a little bit here to this card. So the line was out then. I mean, there was two action in this fight as well, and I mean, it's basically staying steady as it is. Well, I mean, I won't get into the breakdown much. Again, if you guys want to get our full breakdown, go check out the oddscast for UFC Fight Night 118. That's our full breakdown. But in short, I mean, stylistically, this is actually not a bad fight for Hamilton. I mean, I think Weixerack's the type of guy that typically needs to get the fight to the ground and do his best work on the ground. I mean, he's more of a jiu-jitsu, more of a ground specialist for sure. And Hamilton has the wrestling that he should be able to keep this fight upright. So on the feet, even though Weixerack might have some success, because, I mean, obviously what is glaring more than anything else is Hamilton's horrible chin. I mean, it could happen. I mean, you can never count anybody out striking against Hamilton. But realistically, Hamilton should be okay in this matchup. And I think that, again, I mean, he should get top position. And one thing we did notice, I mean, through film study and everything, Weixerack off his back, he's not as good as, if obviously, when he's in top position as well. So I think Hamilton can avoid getting submitted and maintain top position a little bit and do some damage, do some work, and possibly get the win here. So, again, in more extent, more of a better breakdown, a detailed breakdown is available on the podcast for UFC Fight Night 118. But right now, I'm picking the underdog, Hamilton, and I can't believe I'm saying that because it's tough these days, man. With that chin, I get it. I mean, people are going to be like, I can't believe it. They're picking him or whatever. But the truth is, this is a winnable fight for Hamilton. Through retirement talk and all that BS behind it, I mean, he should come and perform here. If he doesn't get knocked out, he's going to win his fight, in my opinion. So the pick is Hamilton to win, however surprising that is.
And I'm only going to throw out the new information since I did break this fight down already before it got yanked at the last minute for UFC Fight Night 118. Now, the reason it got yanked is actually hilarious. Weixerack is like apparently a fan of some soccer team, and a bunch of hooligans from an opposing soccer club showed up to the weigh-ins, and they were concerned about the safety of everyone. So they yanked the fight just because some crazy people showed up at the weigh-ins. which I think is just hilarious. And that being said, Hamilton, one of the reasons that I was more concerned about him for that fight was how quick of a turnaround he had after getting knocked out and retiring. I mean, he just stepped in on short notice right away. And now he's had a little bit more time to heal his brain, which is always good. And, yeah, he'll be fighting in Australia, but I mean, Weiserach will be fighting in Australia too, and he's typically fighting in Europe. So I don't think that'll factor in against either guy. Basically just the more time that he's had to prepare, it's better for Hamilton. The more time between between fights for a TKO loss. And, Weiserach, I mean, the guy just does not have any takedown defense whatsoever. So if Hamilton can fight smart, which is not a guarantee, but just the guy needs to not charge in there recklessly. Weiserach doesn't have a lot of power, and he doesn't have good takedown defense. So if Hamilton can just close the distance and put him on his back, I don't see how he could possibly lose. He just needs to do that without getting knocked out, and that's not a guarantee. I mean, Marcel Fortuna knocked him out. Spitz knocked him out, and those guys aren't exactly name-brand heavyweights. Fortuna's not even a heavyweight. He hasn't even looked good at light heavyweight since knocking Hamilton out. So that is something to consider, and I understand the fade Hamilton train, but I'm going to go with Hamilton here just because I am not impressed with Weiserach whatsoever. Now, moving on to another fight that was rescheduled for this event, we have a lightweight contest between Nick Lentz, who is 29-8-2 with one no contest, and Will Brooks, who is 18-3. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Brooks, -385, the comeback on Lentz at +265. Right now, looking over at five dimes. It is currently Brooks -550, the comeback on Lentz at +425. So more action coming in Brooks's way. A little bit surprising because, I mean, that action has come in the last 24 hours or so, the heavier action on Brooks. And again, this line was already out there. I mean, this is another fight, like Brian just mentioned, that did get pushed back as Lentz was ill. Medical issues that he had back at UFC 216. So it's rebooked for this card. And the line settled, I believe, the closed around 380 or so at that time when it was pulled. So now we have more action coming in on Brooks. I mean, not much faith on Lentz. A lot of people believe that Brooks, you know, that the former Bellator champion, all the, you know, the good fights and all the wins that he had over Bellator would translate well. But man, unfortunately for Brooks thus far, it's been a rough, rough run, a rough ride in the UFC. But I think he could get back on track here with a win over Nick Lentz. And Lentz is not going to be an easy win, so it's not like the UFC is doing him any huge favors. But I think Brooks should be a solid favorite here. I mean, how they match up stylistically, both these guys are similar in a lot of ways. I mean, but both of them have a little bit of striking they can go to that's getting constantly getting better, get a little more confident, getting a little bit more power. Both these guys like to take the fight to the floor and utilize their grappling and their grinding styles. And of course, both these guys can submit you as well. So, I mean, a lot of similarities. I just think that Brooks is just going to be a little bit physically bigger. He's going to be a little bit, I think, maybe a little bit cleaner. And I don't want to say overall more active because Lentz can be aggressive at times as well. But I think Brooks is just going to be able to control the pace of the octagon and the cage. And I think Brooks is going to be probably able to get top position on the ground. I mean, if anything, Lentz has been put on his back a little bit too often throughout his career, and it has affected him. I mean, he's lost several fights that way as well. But again, I mean, overall, Lentz's wrestling is usually on point, and his striking ability and his just his experience throughout, I mean, makes him a tough, tough out. So I think the line's getting a little bit out of hand where it is now. I don't think it should quite be that high, but that being said, I do expect Brooks to win. And again, it's going to come down to, I think it'll be a close fight everywhere it takes place, but I think Brooks' control is what's going to win him this fight, and a much needed win for him as well. Because I mean, man, the guy does have some talent, and what we all thought would be a potential title contender, maybe he can get back on track and we could see that happen down the road. But right now, doesn't look good for Brooks. I mean, he definitely needs to get this W here against Lentz. So the pick is Brooks. Again, you guys can go back and listen to our UFC 216 breakdown. We did break this fight down a little bit more extensively on that card. Like I said, it is what it is. Stylistically, this is a good fight for Brooks, and I'm going to pick him to win.
Plain and simple, Will Brooks is just a better fighter overall in every single area than Nick Lentz. Lentz is a wrestler. I think Will Brooks is a better wrestler. Lentz has decent striking. Will Brooks has better striking. I mean, he's gone five rounds in Bellator main events. Lentz is aggressive. I think Will Brooks can be more aggressive if he wants to be. Brooks is longer, taller, stronger. I just think every single facet of Nick Lentz's game that he's kind of relied on is one-upped by Will Brooks. I know Brooks hasn't had the best run so far in the lightweight division, but he's had a couple tough matchups, and this time around, it's a very favorable matchup. I mean, Lentz, I think, got his way, delayed a beatdown by pulling out due to the illness the last time, and now that he's healthy and ready to go, I think that the beatdown is on. I expect Will Brooks to just get the better of Lentz over the course of three rounds. I don't know if he'll get a knockout or a finish or anything, but unless Lentz clips him, because Brooks, I think, his only real weakness is, I think, chin strength potentially. Unless Lentz clips him, I don't see how Brooks loses. So my pick is going to be Will Brooks. Now moving on to the main event of the preliminary card, we have Ryan Benoit, who is 9-5 in the flyweight division, taking on Ashkan Mokhtarian, who is 13-2. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Benoit's -230, the comeback on Mokhtarian at +170. Right now it's actually Benoit -265, Mokhtarian at +225. No respect for the Aussie here in this spot for Mokhtarian. I mean, he made his official UFC debut not long ago, and unfortunately for him, it wasn't a win, but he faced a very game fighter in John Moraga. So making your debut against a fighter like that, I mean, it's kind of a tough matchup anyway. I mean, meaning Moraga's been in there, you know, he's been a former title contender for crying out loud. So, I mean, just getting thrown right into the fire. So you got to give Mokhtarian a little bit of credit and respect for that, you know, stepping in to the UFC, the world's biggest and best organization when it comes to fighting and facing one of their better fighters in the weight class right away. But it didn't go so well for him. I mean, it's a clear win for Moraga. So I think a lot of fans and a lot of bettors out there lost a little bit of respect despite the step up in competition and the understanding that he should suffer that loss. I mean, he was a, you know, decent little underdog in that spot too. So I think his stock actually dropped a little bit more. I mean, the truth is, he hasn't faced great competition throughout, you know, his career before he entered the UFC, obviously Mokhtarian, and he's okay. I mean, he's not going to blow you away with anything. He's a very well-rounded fighter, but it's not like he's going to go out there and just overwhelm you with his striking ability. It's not like he's going to overwhelm you with his wrestling or submission ability either. So he's a solid fighter that's well-rounded, that's getting better, but he's just not great anywhere. And Benoit has a little bit more potential, has a little bit more promise, has a little bit more, I think, explosion, a little bit more athleticism, a little bit more speed. Again, and he's actually faced much better competition along the way. I mean, he can utilize some of that wrestling, some of his stand-up ability as well. So this is a fight that I think is going to be relatively competitive despite all the kind of bad I was saying about Mokhtarian and about all the good I'm saying about Benoit. I still think it's going to be competitive. And where the line is right now, I mean, the bettors bet it up from -230 to -265. I think that's getting a little bit sketchy because I think this is going to be a fight that probably is a 29-28 type of competitive decision if there's not a finish along the way either way. So, yeah, I mean, with the state of MMA judging, we always say it could be tough if it hits the scorecards, especially Mokhtarian obviously in front of, you know, his hometown crowd as well. So we'll see how it goes if it does in fact hit the scorecards. But overall, I just think Benoit has a little bit of an edge. Like I said, I think he's just going to be the cleaner striker of the two. I think he can utilize, I mean, a little bit of everything. I think he's just going to be a step ahead of Mokhtarian overall. And I think he's going to get the W. So I'll leave it at that. I think Benoit is a side overall. I'd be surprised if Mokhtarian does pull off, the upset win here, but at the same time, I wouldn't be surprised if it is a competitive fight, a lot more competitive than people realize. So the pick is Benoit to win a competitive type of decision.
And I like Benoit here as well. I just think Benoit has more power. He's more active. Mokhtarian, yeah, he only had the one UFC fight and it was against a decent fighter in John Moraga and he got blown out. So he's facing someone a little bit lower down the totem pole, but I think Benoit is still very tough. He has some quality wins inside the octagon, like Sergio Pettis. So, you know, this is a guy that you can't underestimate. Really, the people that beat Benoit are the ones that just out-technique him or maybe, you know, can smash him on the ground. And I just don't see Mokhtarian being able to do either. I think Mokhtarian's more a guy that's just used to beating up on lower tier competition. And I think he was absolutely, stunned by the bright lights of the Octagon the last time out. And I don't think Benoit is that much of a step down from Moraga. And I expect Benoit to just beat up a little bit on Mokhtarian and land some good strikes along the way. I think that there's actually a decent chance that Benoit gets a knockout here. So my pick is going to be Ryan Benoit. Now moving on to the Fox Sports 1 main card in a 150-pound catchweight, we have Alexander Volkanovski, who is 15-1, taking on New Zealander Shane Young, stepping in on short notice with an 11-3 record. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I open Volkanovski -505 to come back on Young at +335. 5-1 favorite wasn't quite enough. Right now, looking over five dimes, Volkanovski is at -650. The comeback on Young is at +475. Am I surprised about that? No, not really. I mean, Volkanovski, since he debuted in the UFC, I mean, the hype around him has been ridiculous. And you know what? It's justified. I mean, the guy's a beast. The guy's so good everywhere the fight takes place. He's been battle tested now, of course, as well. So he's just a tough out with his aggression, with his physicality, with his skill. I mean, he is a very tough, tough out. And making your UFC debut on short notice, kind of feel bad for Young, I mean, in this spot. That's why I opened him such a big underdog, and that's why the bettors are betting against him here as well. But getting into Young a little bit, man, he's really not that bad. I mean, you know, he's 24 years old, so he's the type of fighter that actually at 11-3 with his overall resume thus far, starting to get some solid experience. And of course, making his UFC debut now, and even if he does suffer a loss here that we're all expecting, I mean, it'll be a good experience, you know, win or lose, and then he can move on and probably get a much more, a manageable fight as far as victory goes for him in his next spot, but, in the UFC, of course. But that being said, I mean, overall, like I said, Young is a Aussie prospect, has a lot of potential. He's got a complete game, but he's still improving in all areas. On the feet, he likes to work behind a decent lead jab. He's got some okay boxing to go along with it. Does look for takedowns as well. Most of them are like trips and body lock style takedowns. And he does look for quick subs as far as chokes, et cetera. So, I mean, Young is a finisher. He's got the finishing ability. Now, will he finish a guy like Volkanovski? No, it's a big step up. I doubt it. I mean, but that's his path to victory right there, is catching him, making a mistake. You know, Volkanovski maybe underestimating the kid a little bit and, you know, just makes one mistake. Young could maybe capitalize the finishing. But outside of that, it's going to be a long night for Young. So it's hard to pick against Volkanovski again. I mean, I think he's the stronger fighter. He's the more experienced fighter. I think he hits a little bit harder, obviously, as well. He'll be able to grind Young out along the way. So it'd just be hard to imagine Volkanovski losing this fight in this spot here. So the pick is Volkanovski to win. I wouldn't lay it now though. -650. I mean, what kind of value is out there for that? So it's probably a pass situation as far as the betting window goes, but the pick is Volkanovski.
This one's very simple. I mean, Volkanovski's facing basically the third opponent after two previous opponents had to step out due to injuries. I consider Volkanovski a top 15 featherweight already. I mean, this guy made his debut in the UFC at lightweight, won, dropped down to featherweight, and has been nothing but dominant so far. He has excellent wrestling, good top position, good ground and pound, decent submission ability from top position. He just hits hard, and on the feet, he's not bad either. So, I mean, this is definitely a guy that I could see getting himself into contention by the end of 2018. So Volkanovski, you know, Shane Young is going to have a long or potentially very short night ahead of him. This guy is stepping in on very short notice. He's a New Zealander. He's tough. He's won a couple fights in a row, but there's just nothing that can really prepare you for stepping in to face a really great fighter on short notice like this. So I don't think this goes well for Young. I think Volkanovski just takes him down over and over and over again until he eventually gets a stoppage victory. Especially with the catch weight, Volkanovski's not going to have to cut as much weight. They're doing this to be nice so Young can make weight, but I mean, he's probably still going to have to cut a decent amount of weight just to make sure he makes it on time just because of the short notice, while Volkanovski just has to cut less. So, I mean, this isn't because Young's way bigger or anything. I mean, he's going to have a little bit of a height advantage, but I just don't think this goes well for Young. I think Volkanovski doesn't just win, but he absolutely obliterates him. So my pick is going to be Volkanovski. Now, moving up to the middleweight division, we have Elias Theodoro, who is 14-2, taking on Daniel Kelly, who is 13-2. Now, Nick, what's the MMA odds makers perspective on this one?
Happen Theodoro -210, the comeback on Kelly at +160. Right now, looking over five dives, it is Theodoro -260, the comeback on Kelly at +220. Man, do I hate making lines on Kelly. It's just, it's difficult because you could never count out the old man. I mean, I'm saying old man, he's 40 years old. Hey, I'm 40, so nothing there, but I'm not in a, I mean, no disrespect there, but what I'm saying is I'm not in the cage fighting, obviously. So you got to give a lot of respect for Kelly, man. I mean, what he's accomplished throughout his career, his judo background, everything. I mean, the guy wanted to make himself relevant, wanted the spot in the UFC, wanted to get himself better, and he's done all that. I mean, he's worked really hard for what he's gotten, and you got to take your hat off to him. I mean, Kelly is, I don't know. I mean, he's one of those, he's kind of like the Cinderella man in a lot of ways. If you guys watch that movie, it's incredible because some of the upset wins that he's pulled, I mean, who would have suspected it? Who would have thought Daniel Kelly beats Rashad Evans? Not I. I mean, I thought he was going to lose to Kamosi. I thought he was going to lose to Junior, Carlos Junior as well. So this guy's just proven us wrong time and time again. I mean, I know unfortunately for him, he suffered a knockout loss to Brunson in his last fight, but Brunson's been doing that to a lot of people recently, it seems. So not even a bad loss. Now he's going to be able to get back on track here, possibly against Theodoro. That's not going to be easy though. Theodoro, I don't know. I mean, Theodoro's a pretty solid fighter for sure. I mean, he's not going to be outclassed here by Kelly by any means. It's just the problem with Theodoro that I have is sometimes he got to put his foot on the gas a little bit more. He likes to kind of work from the outside and just doesn't, you know, step on the gas enough to be a little bit more aggressive, to put that killer instinct to work, like to just be a little bit more nasty is what I like to see out of Theodoro. He could potentially knock Kelly out. I mean, if any bad spot in Kelly's game, it's definitely his chin. I mean, again, he's 40 years old. He's been knocked out a couple times. Theodoro doesn't really have that one punch knockout power in most cases, or one kick knockout power, you would think. But I mean, he's a strong guy. I think if any spot he could do it at, probably a fight like this. But other than that, it's going to be a close fight. I mean, Theodoro, I think, edges him out, I think, in most areas. I would say the boxing, though, the hands would belong to Kelly. I mean, from what we've seen recently out of the two, I think that you could say that Kelly has better boxing than Theodoro, but I think Theodoro's striking as a whole is a little bit more complex and is a little bit more effective than Kelly's overall. So he mixes things up a little bit better. So I think the ground, you could say almost the same thing. It's going to be hard for these guys to kind of take each other down as well. I think they can neutralize each other out a little bit here on the ground. And then I think overall it's going to be Theodoro kind of, even though I say he doesn't get aggressive at times, I think he'll be able to control most of this fight, though. And if it does hit the scorecards, he probably wins a 29-28 type of competitive decision. So the pick is Theodoro. I don't think it's going to be a really fun fight to watch. I think it'll be kind of lackluster at times, but I do think Theodoro gets a win. And honestly, he needs to get this win. I mean, if he loses to Kelly, I know Kelly's beaten a lot of decent fighters, like I said, but if Theodoro definitely wants to keep on moving up that middleweight ladder, he needs to win fights like this. So he needs this win. So the pick is Theodoro to win. I think he gets it done.
Elias Theodoro is definitely the more capable fighter of the two between himself and Daniel Kelly, but when Daniel Kelly gets in trouble, it's been against guys that can just blow him out of the water right away, like a Derek Brunson, like a Sam Alvey, that just connect on him early and then just take him right out of the fight. He actually does pretty well against guys that he can kind of use his slow grinding pace against on the feet or get the takedowns and work from top position on the ground. Now, against Elias Theodoro, I'm not sure either of those will be that effective. Theodoro, honestly, is not that impressive of a striker. He has a decent kicking game. He has a decent striking game with his hands, but he's just not that active. I mean, Kelly's actually the more active striker of the two, which is a bit of a concern. I mean, if Theodoro tries to just go out there and have a stand-up battle with Kelly, he could lose it, theoretically. Granted, all it's going to take is one good shot from Theodoro and Kelly should get hurt and potentially finished. And I don't see Kelly hurting or finishing Theodoro at any point. Theodoro is the better wrestler, but Kelly does have some that judo background and that is great for balance. And I can see Kelly thwarting takedown attempts. So, I mean, if Theodoro is going to win, he's going to have to be more aggressive than usual and he's going to have to be more technical than usual because while Kelly isn't the most impressive striker, he can be effective. I mean, look at what he did against Rashad Evans. So you have to take that into consideration. I'm leaning Theodoru, but I do not think this is a blowout by any stretch of the imagination, especially with the way that Theodoru can have close fights against a lot of people. So my pick is Theodoru, but please be careful with this fight. Now moving down to the welterweight division, we have Jake Matthews, who is 11-3, taking on Bojan Velikovic, who is 15-5-1. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Matthews, -175, the comeback of Velikovic at +135. Right now over five dimes, it is currently Matthews -140, the comeback of Velikovic is at +120. So line margins have tightened up a little bit, and there's been about a 15-cent drop on the dog. So a little bit more action coming in the dog's way. I was surprised at the dog action here because, I mean, typically speaking, Velikovic doesn't get a ton of respect out there. You guys that have listened to the podcast know I respect the guy. I think he's a tremendous fighter, underrated in most cases here. But I'm glad to see kind of the action coming in Velikovic's way here because people are starting to respect him despite his loss, in his last fight against Till, which – I mean, I think it was respectable considering that Till goes on and just demolished Cerrone like he did and the performances that Till has had. I mean, Till is definitely a beast and he's one of the best prospects and future title contenders, obviously at 170 pounds. There's no doubt about that. So that loss does not look bad to Velikovic now. But Velikovic's game, I mean, he's well-rounded. He's faced good competition throughout his career, even before he got into UFC. I mean, the guy has decent striking, underrated boxing, underrated power. The guy has some wrestling to go along with us, a good sub game on the ground as well. Offensively, I mean, he can submit you on the ground. He is a well-rounded fighter, all areas. I mean, he even has decent takedown defense. And I'm saying that despite the fact that he has been put on his back and he has been controlled, you know, in the UFC and even on other fights as well. So that's an area, if anything, that he should improve on the most, it would be keep on working on that wrestling and that takedown defense because, again, that's hindered him in the past a little bit. But typically speaking, I mean, the guy it doesn't just, you know, lay on his back. He'll try to get up. He'll try to maneuver out of it. He tries to look for a sub and gets out of that position more times than not. So Velikovic is going to be a handful for Matthews. Matthews is the prospect here, though. I mean, he's the one that's 23 years old. He's the one that's actually moving up to welterweight from lightweight. And I think he kind of needed something because, man, he needed to do something because his fight against Holbrook was – just disappointing. I mean, a guy like this, talk about winning fights that you should, like we were just talking about with Theodoro. You don't lose a fight to Holbrook if you're Jake Matthews, especially if you're that type of prospect. I mean, again, no disrespect to Holbrook, but I mean, if you're on that level that's potentially a UFC star and a title contender one day, I mean, you don't lose those fights. So that was a lackluster performance, to say the least, for Matthews. I mean, it ended up being a split decision, so different judges, you never know. But still, I mean, that was a bad performance. His performance against Lee, he let Lee get superior position on him on the ground. And then, you know, he got beat, but got put in a bad spot, and there's nothing he could do about it. So, again, Kevin Lee is a very good fighter. I mean, for crying out loud, I just fought for the title. I understand that. But still, there's – I don't know. I mean, after that performance against Johnny Case, I was expecting Matthews to continue to improve and continue to get better. And, again, take away that Lee fight. I mean, the Holbrook fight was disappointing, so we haven't seen that. So now he's moving up. Maybe the weight cut is too much for Matthews. Maybe this is going to be a better weight class. We'll see because he was a pretty big lightweight. I mean, so I think here – in most cases, he's not going to be too much undersized as a welterweight either, but Velikovic is going to be the bigger fighter here. So Matthews is going to have to try his best to get some takedowns. He's going to have to try to work his stand-up game. He is going to have a little bit of speed. I think Matthews overall, I mean, it's tough to say that his defense is better because Velikovic does get tagged at times and has been rocked, but Velikovic is one of those types of fighters that, man, I mean, he gets rocked and he looks hurt, but somehow, some way he survives. I mean, the guy's never been knocked out in his career, but if you look at several of his fights, he's been rocked to the point where you think, oh man, he's not going to survive this, but he does. So Matthews is going to have to try to work those hands, try to put it on him a little bit on the feet, get him rocked, get him down on the ground, try to control him on the ground as well. It's going to be hard for him to stop Velikovic. I mean, the guy's never been finished in his career. So Matthews is going to have to grind out a gritty, hard-fought battle at 170 pounds more than likely. And I'm not so sure he gets it done. I mean, especially based on his recent performances, Velikovic is definitely a good fighter that's going to test Matthews in all area. And I think as the fight progresses a little bit, Matthews might get a little bit frustrated. And that's where Velikovic usually starts taking control and taking over fights. So I think that's what we're going to see here as well. So the pick is actually the underdog for me. I'm going to stay with, you know, my underdog. Usually Velikovic is one of those guys that I like to bet because, again, he's severely underrated at times. So I'm going to stick with him. I think that Velikovic does pull off another upset win over Matthews here. So the pick is Velikovic to win.
As Nick mentioned, Jake Matthews looked so good against Johnny Case, but he has really fallen off since then. I mean, the performance against Holbrook is just inexcusable, in my opinion. Now, looking at Volkovich, now, yeah, he hasn't had the greatest run in the UFC, but he's been competitive against just about everybody until his most recent fight where, you know, he took a bit of a beating against Darren Till, but Darren Till's a top 10 UFC welterweight at this point after his recent finish over Donald Cerrone. So, you know, that performance looks a little bit better in retrospect, considering that he actually survived that fight. Now, Volkovich against Matthews. Matthews is moving up from the lightweight division, and the things that Matthews had issues with were his chin strength was definitely a problem. He got hurt repeatedly in the lightweight division, and then also he was still a little bit raw with his submission defense. He got caught by James Vick, and he got put in some perilous positions by just superior fighters on the ground. So against Volkovich, Volkovich is going to be the longer fighter, the taller fighter, although Matthews is probably going to be a little bit more explosive, a little bit of the quicker, maybe a little bit of a better athlete. Matthews is still very young, 23 years old, and so he still has a lot of room for growth, but the performance against Holbrook, seriously, I was so disappointed with just, it just felt like he just could not go for it after he'd suffered such a bad loss to Kevin Lee. Now, Volkovich, this guy is just really well-rounded. He's a solid striker, solid takedown defense, solid in the clinch. He's solid on the ground, and he has tremendous conditioning. So Matthews, I think, needs to take him out quickly because it's going to be difficult to win a decision against somebody that gets stronger as the fight goes. And I'm just not convinced that Matthews is that type of fighter. So Matthews needs to get takedowns. And Volkovich, while he does get taken down, and he has been taken down by some elite wrestlers, I don't know if Matthews has that elite wrestling to do that, especially with how Volkovich can really wear you out with a takedown when you try to take him down. So there's just a lot of intangibles going against Matthews, especially with just his poor performance at lightweight, moving up to welterweight and facing a pretty decent welterweight in his 170-pound debut. I just don't think this goes well for the youngster, and I think Volkovich probably wins a decision. So my pick is going to be Volkovich. Now, sticking with the welterweight division, we have Tim Means, who is 27-8-1 with one no contest, taking on Bilal Muhammad, who is 12-2. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I up in Means -190, the comeback of Muhammad at +150. Right now, looking over five dimes, it is currently Means -220, the comeback on Muhammad at +180. Line was even higher a little bit. Now we're starting to see some action come back down on Muhammad. So more action overall, though, on Tim Means. Not that surprised. It's just a weird spot for me. I mean, honestly, because typically speaking, Means is just one of those nasty finishers. And Muhammad is a guy that is very chinny. I mean, I know he's only been officially knocked out one time in his career, but man, has he been rocked. He's been, I mean, just almost to the point where he's been finished several times. I mean, he, again, give him credit for surviving some of those as well. But Muhammad's chin and his strike defense on the feet at times is a huge disappointment, a huge letdown. So outside of that, though, Muhammad is a very talented fighter. I mean, the guy's good. The guy has a well-rounded game. He's been training with Rufus Sport, which I think is a really good move for his career. And the guy seems to be improving. I mean, his leg kicks are getting better. Everything about Muhammad, I mean, I like what I see in him. It's just I don't trust that chin. That's the problem with him. I mean, he typically speaking, he can, you know, weather the early storm again and kind of grind people out along the way. And that's what he has to do against Means here as well, because that storm is going to be nasty. Again, Means knows what he's up against. I'm sure he knows that Muhammad's a bit chinny and he's going to want to test that out. And Means is not an easy out by any means. So I'm pardon the pun there. But at the same time, I just think it's hard not to pick Means in this fight. I mean, he does have decent takedown defense. That's the thing. Again, one kryptonite or one glaring problem that Means had in the past, I mean, along the way at times, is the ground. I mean, he gets put on his back. He gets controlled. He's been submitted, obviously, four times. I mean, that's how he's lost the majority of his fights. So the ground has been a little bit of a problem. But Means has showed at times that he has better takedown defense than we all think. So if his takedown defense comes into play here and he's able to keep the fight upright, I think he can win the fight over Muhammad. I think he can obviously, even if he doesn't knock Muhammad out, he can just outpoint him along the way because he does have the striking advantage over Muhammad. So the pick is Means. Again, it's hard for me not to pick him. I think Means could finish this fight. I think he can, I mean, any round, he could finish Muhammad, or if it hits the scorecards, I think Means can win there as well. And I think Muhammad's best path to victory would be obviously grinding him out on the scorecards again, getting some takedowns along the way, or hopping on Means' back and possibly subbing him there as well. So there is a path to victory for Muhammad. And again, stylistically, this is just such a weird matchup for me. I don't know. I mean, we could very well see an upset here. I'm kind of scratching my head. I don't think it should happen. I think the Means should go out there and do what I said he will do, but I don't know. It's just one of those fights that to me is a little bit intriguing because it's just such a weird matchup and it shouldn't be a good one for Muhammad, but I think that part of me thinks he might come through here and pull off the upset. So we'll see. But the pick is Means. I mean, again, you just got to believe in what you see. And out there, I've seen that Means is a finisher and Muhammad is definitely sketchy when it comes to his chin and his strike defense at times. So it's not a good combination here. So the pick is Means for me.
And I think I'm going to come in the other way. And what's convincing me was Tim Means' performance in the rematch against Alex Oliveira. He just kind of got worn down a little bit by Oliveira's aggression and the takedown attempts. And then eventually Oliveira got top position against him, advanced to a dominant position and got a submission. Now, I'm not saying that Belal Muhammad is going to finish Tim Means because for the most part, Belal Muhammad wins fights by decision. He just grinds people out and then wears them down and then just does enough to win at least two out of the three rounds. Muhammad does not have a good chin, and we've seen that. I mean, his UFC debut against Joe Ban, he was just brutalized early in that fight, but then he came back strong late. This guy has tremendous conditioning and he's well-rounded. And then the Luque fight, he got blasted early and he got taken out. But if you look at his other performances, I mean, this guy is definitely capable of going out there and putting on a good performance and winning fights. I mean, look what he did against Randy Brown, against Jordan Meehan. Those were spectacular performances to give him his recent two-fight winning streak. And what's really been helping him do it was the stand-up, being active on the feet, but mixing in takedowns. Muhammad is not the greatest takedown artist, but he's just active and aggressive with it and relentless. And he's not the greatest wrestler, but he can wear you down. So basically the way I see this fight playing out is either Tim Means knocks Muhammad out in the first round or Muhammad wins a decision. I can see Tim Means winning early if he can clip Muhammad and hurt him, but not put him away. Or I could just see Muhammad just out grinding Means over the course of three rounds in general. I mean, this guy can just get in your face, take away some of your weapons, and then just be active and relentless and aggressive. And that's sometimes all it takes. So I like Muhammad here. I think this is a decent matchup for him. The only concern, obviously, is Means' power, Muhammad's chin. That clearly, this fight could end in 10 seconds and I could look like an idiot, which is completely possible. But I will just accept that. There's a chance that that happens, but I like the chance that Muhammad grinds this out and wins a decision even better. So my pick is going to be Belal Muhammad. Now moving on to the co-main event of the evening in the women's flyweight division, we have Beck Rawlings, who is 7-6, taking on Jessica Rose Clark, who is 7-4 with 1-0 contests. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Rawlings, minus 125. The comeback on Rose Clark at minus 115. Right now, looking over five dimes, it is currently Rawlings minus 150. The comeback on Rose Clark at plus 130. So more action coming in Rawlings' way. This was kind of a tricky line to set, of course, because Rawlings is one of those girls that people love to hate kind of. So the respect factor, even at the betting window, sometimes will show that. But overall, Rawlings is definitely a pretty decent fighter, underrated fighter. I mean, she's almost a 500 type of fighter with her record, but that being said, she's, I think, got a lot more skill, and the level of competition she's faced throughout her career is better than that and record indicates, obviously, because she's faced a lot of solid fighters. So Rawlings is good. I mean, she can do well on the feet. She has some takedown ability. She's got some grappling to go along with it as well, some skill on the ground, so submission game. There's a lot to like about Rawlings, and she's constantly improving. She's moving up from 115 pounds from strawweight to flyweight in this matchup as well, so she should feel a little bit better about herself as far as, you know, not having to deal with that weight cut. But she's facing a very underrated fighter in her own right, in Rose Clark here. I mean, Rose Clark is actually dropping from bantamweight, making her UFC debut here, a short notice debut, I should mention real quick, too, as well, at flyweight, which I think is a good move for her as well. I mean, Rose Clark is going to be, I think, a little bit physically stronger than Rawlings overall, which isn't going to hurt. And they have a lot of similarities because Rose Clark is also a pretty well-rounded fighter. She's, you know, got a little bit of stand-up. She's got a little bit of ground game as well. And she's the type of fighter that can grind out some decisions. So this fight, in my opinion, I open it close to a pick'em with a slight lean towards Rawlings because I believe that's truly how it's going to be. I think it's going to be a back-and-forth fight, a 29-28 split decision type of fight if it hits the scorecards. So I think it's going to be really close. I'm going to lean against the grain here. I'm going to pick Rose Clark to win. I know a lot of people probably aren't that impressed. If you look at some, you know, her resume, again, outside of the UFC, Rose Clark's resume is not that bad. I mean, she's faced the likes of Sarah Kaufman. You know, she's basically been a Titan and Invicta veteran. She's faced decent competition. She faced Karina Dom in her last fight as well. Now, of course, a lot of people are going to say the Dom's is way past her prime and all that as well. So, and Rose Clark had a competitive decision win against her, but still, I think that she's come to the point where her career, she has that confidence. She's getting the ability. She's getting better, improving fight by fight. And again, I think it's going to come down here to who's going to kind of be the bully in this fight. And I think it'll go back and forth, but I think Rose Clark is going to actually be the stronger of the two. And that probably gives her enough to control a little bit more of the, maybe the cage time up against the cage where she's pressing Rawlings up and trying to, you know, control the action there a little bit as well. Or if she maintains and gets top position on the ground a little bit more. So I think this fight, again, is going to take place everywhere. It's going to be really competitive and we're going to see a split decision type of fight, but I have to lean a little bit more towards Rose Clark, even though it's short notice. I think she's going to come and get it done. So the pick is Rose Clark.
Beck Rawlings hasn't had the greatest run, but at least she's been in there against some pretty tough opposition. I mean, her last couple fights are two losses, but they were to Tisha Torres, a top five women's strawweight, and Paige VanZant, a fight where, you know, I think Rawlings probably won the first round, and then she just got knocked out of nowhere with a jumping front kick. I mean, it was crazy. So against Jessica Rose Clark, I mean, if you look at her record, and she's only really faced two top women, and they both beat her by decision, in one in Invicta and the other in BFC in Canada against Sarah Kaufman. She fought twice in Invicta. She lost both of those fights. And then her big win of her career was her most recent one, a split decision over a 38-year-old Karina Dom. I mean, that's just not impressive. Yeah, she's been fighting at a higher weight class than Beck Rawlings, but she's not even bigger than Beck Rawlings. Rawlings is actually going to be 2 inches taller. Beck Rawlings was cutting a ton of weight to make the 115-pound weight limit. I think this will be really good for her to be fighting at 125. And Rose Clark is probably fighting more of her natural weight class at 125 instead of 135 like she had been for the most part. So I think in terms of size and strength, they should be relatively even, although Rawlings is actually going to have a slight advantage in height and reach. I think Rawlings is going to be just as active as Rose Clark on the feet. And then on the ground, if it goes there, I think Rawlings should be the more active, aggressive fighter on the ground. She's actually improved her ground game significantly. She has a decent submission game. Now, she's not the greatest wrestler. She can wind up on her back, but Rawlings, when she's in top position, is pretty dangerous. So I just think Rawlings is the more well-rounded, dangerous fighter of the two. And yeah, Rose Clark has competed against bigger, stronger opponents, but I think this move is much more beneficial to Rawlings than it is Clark. And you got to remember, Clark has taken this fight on really short notice. She was supposed to fight in Invicta, so it shouldn't be too much of a factor, but she was supposed to be fighting in December, and that her basically, she's moving up a whole month almost. So I like Rawlings here. I think that she can outwork Clark on the feet, and I think that she might be able to outwork her on the ground as well. So my pick is going to be Beck Rawlings. Now moving on to the main event of the evening, we have a heavyweight attraction between Fabricio Werdum, who is 21-7-1, taking on Marcin Tybura, who is 16-2. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I put Werdum -265, the comeback, in Tybura at +185. Right now, over five dimes, it's -345 for Werdum. The comeback in Tybura is a +285. So line margins have tightened up, and there is more action coming in Verdum's way. Not really that surprised. I figured it would get bet up a little bit here with this spot. I mean, Werdum is the former heavyweight champion, obviously. I mean, his storied career, I mean, throughout, it's been fantastic. And the real bottom line here is Werdum has really never been better as far as mentally, maybe even physically. I know that Father Time's catching up to him. He's 40 years old, so, I mean, you can't avoid that. But at the same time, I mean, as far as I think in his prime, I mean, he's pretty close. Again, what minus the chin, I mean, Werdum has never been better. His striking is the best it's ever been. Obviously, his grappling and his jiu-jitsu game's always been there. I mean, he's one of the best grapplers in the world for a long time. He's been, you know, I mean, so that's always been there with him. But as far as becoming a more complete fighter, I mean, these last few years in the UFC, he's really turned it on and he's really improved a lot. So Werdum has never been better. But I think Tybura is getting underestimated here a little bit. I think it's going to be a competitive fight. If Werdum does not get this fight to the ground, even with his improved stand-up game, I think Tybura is going to give him all he can handle. I mean, again, if you look back at Tybura, I know this is a big step up. I mean, a lot of people don't believe he's going to pass this test. I think it's going to be close, a lot closer than people realize, because if you look back, I mean, again, so far in the UFC, his win over Arlovski last time, a lot of people were thinking that it was going to be an easier win for him. I was as well. I mean, it almost was. He looked good early on in that fight, but as it progressed a little bit, Arlovski, you know, made it a lot more competitive. So that's still a pretty solid win, considering Arlovski just had a pretty good, you know, legit win over Albini in his diaper in his last card. So, I mean, that looked pretty good. That was kind of a throwback performance for Arlovski for sure. So he's put together a couple fights that have at least got him to the cards with Arlovski. So what I'm saying is Tybura fought a decent version of Arlovski that we know of, as of late, at least that we've seen. So Tybura, I think it was a good notch on his resume. His confidence is going to continue to grow. And here's another step up, like I said, in Werdum here. And I don't think Tybura is going to win this fight. I'm going to pick Werdum to win because, I mean, stylistically, it's just should be a bad matchup for him because, again, if this fight hits the ground, there's no question Werdum has a big edge on the ground. Tybura, a tough guy to sub. He's never been finished that way on the ground in his career. But that being said, Werdum's such a special fighter. He could finish any heavyweight on the ground, realistically speaking. I mean, you know, you make a mistake, he's right there and gotcha. So, I mean, the ground is definitely where it's at for Werdum on the feet. And as far as, like, octagon experience, I mean, real-time fights, Verdum's been there. He's been through the wars. I mean, you got to give him the slight edge everywhere. So I'm going to pick Werdum. But, again, I'm actually considering and thinking about betting Tybura at that price because at +285 in a competitive fight, I think it is a dog or pass situation despite – you know, me picking Werdum here. So I think people are underestimating Tybura to that point. So I think what you're going to see here is a more competitive and better Tybura as far as a stand-up game goes, and he's going to be able to stuff some of Verdum's takedowns and keep the fight upright and probably open up some eyes on the feet a little bit more so. And he needs to, especially after, again, you know, he's been putting together some quality wins, then all of a sudden has a little bit of a lackluster performance against Arlovski. So interesting fight. Again, not confident in Werdum here as much as everybody else that have bet him up to over a 3-1 favor. And he's going to be the parlay guy that everybody throws in. It's a sure win type of situation. I don't think so. I think it's a dog or pass situation, but I will pick Werdum. Again, his experience, stylistically, I understand the matchup, but I think Tybura is going to probably open up some eyes here and make it a lot more interesting than people realize. But the pick is Werdum to win.
And I can understand people betting Werdum up to 3-1 because I can see why he's a 3-1 favorite. Werdum is the better striker than Tybura. He's got better hands. He's got a solid Muay Thai game from working with Rafael Cordero. And Werdum is way better on the ground. I know Tybura actually does have a pretty good ground game, but Werdum is one of the best ground fighting heavyweights of all time. So if this fight goes to the floor, Werdum should dominate. If it stays standing, Werdum should get the better of Tybura as well. The only things going against Werdum are the fact that his chin has never been that good. So, I mean, if Tybura lands something, then he could hurt him. And Werdum is now 40 years old. So, I still think that Verdum's conditioning and pace and everything are fine. I mean, he tired out Cain Velasquez, of all people, to win the heavyweight championship. So I'm not worried about conditioning, but you know, at 40 years old, you do become a little bit more fragile. So Tabora could hurt Verdum. That's basically the only way I see him winning. I don't see Tabora just winning a stand-up fight. I think Verdum is more active. I mean, look at the way that he performed against Travis Brown. Just basically dominated him both times by just being more active and the better striker. And I think Brown's a better striker than Tabora. Tabora does have a decent kicking game. His hands are decent. But, I mean, there's nothing really amazing about his striking. I mean, he got outworked on the feet by Tim Johnson in his UFC debut, of all people. So, against Verdum should be the clear better fighter here. I know Verdum is stepping in on a bit of short notice for Mark Hunt, but, I mean, this should be a tougher fight for Tabora than Hunt was. So, at least against Hunt, Tabora had some, like, specific advantages, but the only thing he's got against Verdum is chin strength. And I just don't know if Verdum will give him that opportunity to connect to his chin that well. I mean, I don't see him making a big mistake and just chasing him down with his chin in the air like he did against Stipe. So, unless Verdum makes a huge mistake or gets caught, this is Verdum's fight to lose. So he's going to be my pick. So that'll do it for our full event breakdown for UFC Fight Night 121. Our premium bets for the event will be released this Friday following the weigh-ins, so stay tuned for that if you're an MMA Odds Breaker premium member. If we have a free play to give out, make sure to follow at @MMAOBPremium on Twitter because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of our free bets via email if you prefer that method. Just send an email to picks@MMAOddsbreaker.com and we'll add you to our free bet mailing list. Special thanks to our sponsor, Five Dime Sportsbook. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this weekend.